Good morning. So probably most of the co-authors are the audience that I'm talking to. So most of you are probably familiar with at least the goals of this work, if not the results of this work. So this morning I'm going to be presenting data. There'll be minimal interpretation of the data because I haven't figured out what it means yet. This has been an ongoing effort, off and on, way prior to my involvement with it. The last 3 years now, we've been monitoring it, but there's a hit long history of monitoring off and on through the many years. But basically, using adult vial tests to measure bollworm resistance to pyrethroid insecticides, cypermethrin more specifically. So we had to tack on to that, we've wanted to look a little more than just the direct adult vial tests. So we've also looked at the larval hosts using these same moths to try and get a little better understanding of why these insects are more resistant or less resistant. So we've have a number of cooperators from Texas to Virginia. The vials are prepared by a couple of the labs and sent out to all of our cooperators. Our vials, we've been testing only a 5 microgram. Some people have been also testing 10 micrograms of cypermethrin per vial. So we're not getting, you know, an LC50 and we're not seeing shifts on that. This has been determined to be a pretty diagnostic dose to measure shifts in resistance. It's a 24-hour assay. When we determine then whether they're alive or dead at the end of the assay, we then keep those moths, put them in the freezers, separating those that were resistant, i.e. still alive, and susceptible, i.e. dead. Those moths were later sent to Ryan Jackson in USDA, ARS in Stoneville, where he could run a carbon isotope so that you can determine whether that larva had developed on a C4 host, which is predominantly grasses, or a C3 host, which is predominantly broadleaves. Here's a snapshot of our results over the last 3 years. So these are mean survival rates at 5 micrograms over the last 3 years. Louisiana's the hot spot and has continued to be the most resistant colony. But if you look at that, what I would hope to see when I put data like this together is you see sort of a trend, you know, like the hot spot and then not quite as hot and then cooler. But it looks pretty random to me. Doesn't seem to be any geographical rhyme or reason to why we have more resistance or less resistance in any particular spot. That is the crux of the data. Now we're going to tease apart some of that data in a little more detail. Here's the annual. There's a lot of numbers on this page. So these are the 3 years that we've been doing it and the resistance survival levels in each of these states, each of these years. So we'll look at it a little bit closer. If you look at this is the Mid-South states. As I said, Louisiana has the highest survival level in the Mid-South. Tennessee in 2007 had a high survival, but since then it has looked more similar to what I would say the rest of the Mid-South, with the exception of Louisiana. So by and large, the Mid-South, if you look at it, with the exception of Louisiana, is hanging around 10-12% survival. Doesn't seem to be a lot of movement up or down over the 3 years of testing. If we look in the Southeast, Georgia and South Carolina have shown very similar trends. For some reason, in 2007, they had fairly high survival rates. 2008 and 2009, it's been much reduced. In contrast, Virginia, which you would think should maybe follow the same basic trends as the other southeastern states, has had exactly the opposite trend. Very low survival in 2007 and very high survival the last 2 years. In fact, in 2009, it had the highest survival rate of any state monitored. I don't have an explanation. We can't blame it on labs because these three states all get their vials from exactly the same lab. So I don't have an explanation. I'm showing you the data. And we'll go from there. Texas, again, was very high in 2007, has been showing a decreasing trend. This is one spot in Texas. This is mainly from Meg's lab. So Lubbock area with a few moths from John here way down in Weslaco. So the next speaker, Brad Hopkins, will give a much more complete picture of what's happening in Texas. If we take a longer range view, I think we get a much clearer picture of what's happening. So annual variation is variation, and I don't think I would pull any trends out of it. But if I go back to the literature, 1998 was a year of a lot of monitoring done, and a lot of the same states participated in that effort. If I take the averages that we've seen the last 3 years, compare it to a decade earlier, 1998, we can see a fairly clear trend of increased survival at 5 micrograms. Missouri showed a minor reduction. All other states had 5 or more percent increase in survival. So overall, average of 11.5% increase. So I think we are seeing a gradual, but you know, that's 1% increase per year. So it's a very gradual shift, but I think the evidence would say it is a real shift over time. But there's a lot of noise in that data, as you saw in the previous slides. Those were season-long averages. We're collecting this data, of course, over time. So some of these are assayed in May, June, July, over the course of the season. And I plotted here how it changes over the months of the year. So these are three-year averages for each of the months of monitoring. If we exclude September in Tennessee, all the other data looks fairly consistent, follows similar trends. You can see we have increasing resistance from May through July, and that it either plateaus or drops off slightly in August and September. So July is the time when we have the most survival. And just remember that as we go to the next slide. So this is our survival in the assays. I said we were going to look at larval hosts. So the moths that we're collecting in July are coming from a C4 host almost exclusively. So this is the percent of the moths that we collected that were from a C4 host versus a C3 host. And C4 is predominantly grasses. So the dark black line is the average of all the states. And all the states, you know, there's some obviously differences amongst states. But they all tend to follow a similar trend. We have anywhere around, you know, from 20 to 70% in May and June, roughly 50% on average. Goes up to close to 95% in July and then tails off again in August and September. So in July, virtually all of our moths were developed on a C4 host. Which would, by and large, be corn. I said we separated our resistant and susceptible insects separately, hoping that we would see a difference in the resistance level. You know, if we're selecting for resistance in cotton, then our C3 insects should be more resistant than our C4s. We did not see that. There's statistically absolutely no separation in this data here. I think the p-value is 0.6 or 0.8 or something. It's not even close. We do see in 4 of the 5 months, you know, a very minuscule, more resistant, higher levels of resistant insects tend to be more likely from grasses, except in September. And that shift in September may be from cotton, but, you know, again, statistically, there's nothing there. Um, thinking I had another slide here. Ryan had done some research showing that the survival of moths did vary with the host that they were reared on. He had taken a similar the same colony, divided up onto different hosts, and those that were reared on corn tended to survive at a higher rate than those grown on cotton or some of the other hosts. So my suspicion is, you know, we have the highest survival in July. They're all coming from C4 plants in July, and that's probably so our survival is probably not a change in resistance alleles per se, but it is better fitness of those moths in July, and that's why they can survive our 5 microgram dose. So I believe that curve that we see over the year from May through September is a function of the fitness of those moths on the host that they developed. So my conclusions, we see a ton of variability from year to year. I have no explanation for it. There's no geographical explanation for it. I shouldn't say there isn't any. I don't know what it is. Even at worst in Louisiana, the corn earworm resistance level, the mortality we're getting is much less than tobacco budworm is. So we're not at, you know, the crisis levels like we were with tobacco budworm on the pyrethroid resistance. One of the things that I'm real interested in seeing over the next few years, because virtually all of our moths are coming through probably corn or maybe sorghum, they're coming through grasses in July and August. If we adapt these new corn technologies, the implications for population dynamics of bollworm could be huge. So, you know, as we get these smart stacks and Viptera and these new products into the system, all of our bollworms are coming through corn virtually. These new corn are going to produce very, very few bollworms. So I would expect our population should see a substantial reduction over the next couple years if we see a widespread adoption of these technologies. That will make cotton a bigger player again as far as resistance management. So, you know, resistance may occur at a higher rate, but our population should be lower, if that makes any sense. Right now, I don't think cotton is a very big player. Of course, it's not even, doesn't have very many acres anymore, so that makes sense that it's not a real big player. And our resistance is just noisy more than showing real strong changes per year. With that, I'd like to acknowledge ARS has been a huge contributor to this project. Cotton Incorporated has sponsored a lot of this research as well. I'll take questions if you got.
One quick question.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.